on your fishing hole and meet me at the fishing hole. We may not get a bite all day, but don't you rush away. What a great place to rest your bones, and mighty fine for skipping stones. You feel fresh.
God, I whistle horribly. What is wrong with me?
Whether it's cool.
Ah, yes.
Oh, what a spot for whistling like a fool.
Okay.
Day to day, yes, stroll and wander by the vision hole. I can't think of a better way to pass the time of day.
If that doesn't take you back 1,000 years in your memory, nothing will.
If it doesn't put a smile on your face, nothing will.
Yeah.
I mean, you got a heart of stone if you can't.
Yeah, if you don't smile at
least just a grin. I mean, you don't have to get all warm and fuzzy, but if it doesn't at least give you some kind of grin to you.
Yeah.
You know.
So, you know, pretty soon we're going to, you know, like sell ads and do all that kind of stuff, and I can't use any of that stuff anymore.
Right.
You know, wouldn't be right. But for right now, I can promise you the show's not making any money. there's nothing here. You know, hopefully it enticed you into going and purchasing that song from someone.
Right.
That's the teaser from it. You know, go and buy that, download that song, buy it.
Absolutely.
Let's see. So, yesterday we're not starting down there because that led to just a rant. I mean, we had a 15-minute rant yesterday, so let's not rant today. Let's talk fishing. All right. Up on the Peace River.
About a dollar, it still ends up going somewhere. For not too long.
Quiet. Up on the Peace River, what fish are there?
Cormorants and hingos.
fish, not birds, fish.
Well, there's all that, too. I mean, that's the best part about the Peace River is all the sightseeing in addition to the fishing.
Well, I don't know. Jeff was up a tree last night till, I don't know, 12, 1 o'clock in the morning.
Right.
And he said something big came up to the tree stand. He's looking for another deer or a hog or something. I don't know. He's looking for some large animal to eat.
Hogs.
And he said something big, but it wouldn't come into the infrared lights they had set up. So,
nice.
You know, they could hear
Sasquatch.
They could hear it crashing around in the dark, but Sasquatch wouldn't move into where they could get a shot at him.
But everything's bigger than Jeff, so.
Yeah. Fish. Go back to fishing. We're talking about fishing. All right. Up the Peace River.
You got trout scattered throughout the channel going all the way up. I mean, literally from 75 up to the power lines. Still a few oddball juvenile tarpon in there, too. A lot of gar moving around lately. Been getting a lot of reports on gar just everywhere.
I mean, there's even been gar, and I don't know. I haven't looked on the website, which I'll take a quick peek, fishandfranks.com. And then we go to weather and tides, which is the lightning bolt little picture there, and down to the Peace River. I haven't seen what the Peace River is doing for water for the light.
Ooh, probably not much.
That button's messed up.
Probably not
much. I gotta reload that. All right. It still works, but it says the wrong thing. Let's see. Well, that explains why the gar down by 41. We've got over 3 feet of water in Arcadia, which means we've got, you know,
some
a foot
significant
and a half,
water flow, yeah.
Foot and a half of water coming down at us, you know. Foot and a half, 2 foot of water rolling down the Peace River. That's a lot of fresh water.
Yeah.
And what's significant about that is salt's heavier than water, so the salt is down by the bottom, the fresh water's on the top. Gar, the ones that we have, the spotted gar, right?
Or Florida gar and long nose gar.
The Florida gar, the long nose gar, they don't really go much more than a couple feet down into the water.
Mm-mm.
And they really like hanging out in that first foot and a half of the water, and it's predominantly fresh at this point. There's no real salt right on the surface of the water. Explains why a lot of the shrimp are dying in some of the canals right now.
Right.
I had not looked at the water flow. And the reason that's on there is you can tell if you need to leave your shrimp on an aerator or you can put them in the water. Right now, if you're going to try and keep shrimp in your canal alive, you need like a bucket that you can sink to the bottom. And it's got to be more than 3 feet of water.
I think the other two is that the fluctuation in the temperature is so drastic because, I mean, we're getting most of our shrimp still out of Hernando.
Yeah.
And usually this time of year, they're getting them out of Tampa Bay.
Right.
So you got quite a few degrees of water temperature. I mean, up there, when they get the fronts, they're several degrees cooler than we have been.
Oh, yeah. We're just close enough to the equator we're like that last line of the equator thing, because mm-hmm. like Costa Rica only varies, what, 10, 15 degrees all year?
Yeah, probably about 10 degrees, I think.
Yeah, it's not, I mean, it goes from like...
goes from humid to dry, that's about it.
Yeah, you got it from like 65 to 75 degrees. I mean, yeah. It's just, you know, one or the other. But here, we don't get as cold as they do up north, and we don't get as hot as they do right. north of us. Once you, by the time you're hitting Tampa, every mile you go north, the temperatures fluctuate more. It gets colder and it gets hotter. We're just on the edge of that temperature zone. The Keys don't have the temperature variant that we do.
Well, and you also look at like all the states that, you know, if you look at like climate zones, like for as far as plant life goes, it seems like the majority of the states have like one. Some of them have two climate zones in them, but Florida's got four or five different climate zones. You know, some serious drastic changes, you know, so every little bit you go south, it's a pretty significant difference in change, and that affects those fish big time, and shrimp, all of it.
So anyway, so we get a lot of gar up there, and now gar are really cool. Best way to catch them is under a bobber. If you're a fly fisherman and you want to do the gar, take about, I would say, a wide gap hook, a Mustad 37-140 or something like that, and because with that it kind of loops the bill of the fish. But your fly for gar fishing is a red ribbon. And what you want to do is take some ribbon material and do about 4 to 6 inches of ribbon off the hook. And at the end of it, when you're doing the ribbon, you want to make sure that it's got a few little snags in it. Make sure it's not a very nice, perfect ribbon, because what you're literally going to do is snag up their teeth when they come to chew on it. And that's how you catch them with a fly, because it's almost impossible. You can use a regular number 2 or number 4 hook, but you're literally getting their teeth snagged in the ribbon. They'll mm-hmm. chase that ribbon, and when they go to bite it, they've got very, very sharp, needle-like teeth, more what you think of a muskie or a northern pike, and they'll get snagged in the ribbon, and right. that's the way you can catch them on a fly.
It's pretty interesting. I've seen like the islanders in the Polynesian area and Madagascar and stuff like that, the natives will go in, and you know the banana spiders that we have here, the right. big yellow ones that build the big webs.
Yep.
They'll actually go in and collect the webs off of those and tie them to a string in a little glob and drag them behind the boat to catch needlefish and houndfish in them, because they'll just get entangled in it. They come up to bite it thinking it's a minnow, and they get stuck in it with their teeth.
Yeah. Yeah, that's basically the way I was taught to fly fish for gar by one of the guys who used to come in here a long, 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 long time ago. And I've never seen anybody successful with them except him, and that was his secret.
Yeah, that's pretty cool.
Anyway, so that's the gar. Coming down by 41, we've got a little bit of trout down here by 41.
Some trout, some silver trout and speckled trout both. There's also been quite a few ladyfish down there. Pardon me. Some whiting.
Yeah, we gotta quit smoking.
There's been an occasional jack.
Our health is going to heck, you know.
Every day.
Every day, yeah. We're going to have to, you know, pretty soon you're going to be hearing very angry Frank and Robert. We're going to have to give this up pretty soon. But for right now, there's nothing in the world like feeding your addiction. Caffeine, nicotine, you know.
Yeah, little hiccup from Mountain Dew.
Yeah. So, anyway.
There's this. The snook bite's been really spotty at night down there. There are a lot of snook down there, but they've been super inconsistent. Been a few redfish and an oddball black drum. There's even been a few smaller sharks popping up there, you know, little bonnet heads and the occasional Atlantic sharp nose. So it's been kind of a mixture, but every day's been a real roll of the dice on good or bad.
Yeah. How's the canals in Port Charlotte? We had a nice population of sand bream that we're getting. I know up around the Ackerman, O'Hara, back up in there, some nice black drum up through those canals.
Mangrove snapper bite's been okay. Been a lot of juvenile tarpon popping up around the snook lights with some snook, too. So the night guys are going out there and entertaining themselves with that.
I think, yeah, that's... now, tonight, we're going back to Luigi's. We're doing a thing. It's hard to believe. People loved the talk last night, and I want to preface it with that, because what we did was we did an hour and a half about a banana jig and a teaser. And that banana jig, it's what people now call a crazy or silly jig. And that we took an hour and a half time, it's actually been an hour and 15 minutes, to go over how to use it, what to use it with. We had everybody build a tandem rig, which is one of my old-time macro rigs with the banana jig and the teaser all tied together. Gave everybody a jig and a little teaser and then some leader material, and we had them build up the rigs, and it was really cool. And what was, I think, most surprised me is how much fun we had and how much people enjoyed that. And literally, it was a talk about two items and the possible ways of using them. And it's just staggering once you get into an item and you break it down. And I mean, you got to admit, Robert, they were just fascinated.
We had actually several people, well, two people in this morning at the bottom that were here that were at the talk last night.
And it's not about the money, guys. We're talking about, thing about it was, the one pack of jigs is $2.39. The pack of teasers is $1.99. This is, you know, we weren't talking about it to make big sales on it, but thanks to Tease Tackle. Tease Tackle comes with a black label, and they were the ones who gave me the great price so I could afford to give everybody free samples. And but it was, I'm still staggered about, because they were so into it and all the different things you could do to it. And I think we awoke a lot of potential tackle innovators last night.
Well, I think the other cool thing about, like you said, the variety that you can do with it, it reminds me similar to like a weedless gold spoon. I mean, it's so versatile.
We could do an hour and a half talk on just a weedless spoon.
Yeah.
The possibilities are so much.
Yeah, it's an amazing little lure.
We're going back tonight. Tonight's open seating, and it's first come, first serve. We cannot guarantee you get a seat. Last night was reserved seating, and we had, you know, there was just standing room only.
Right.
So, but tonight is all about, you know, first come, first serve. It's our open seating night for people who can't make reservations, but had a great time. The food was a little slow, but you got to remember, when you come to the meeting, what do you care? You're going to be there till 8 o'clock anyway.
Well, they had a packed house all together, though.
I mean, they had 28 people on a party reservation, plus regular customers, plus 50 people in the room. Everybody showed up at once. Yeah. And I thought they did a great job of putting it together.
Yeah,
but
everything
was a little slow, but everybody was done eating long before the meeting was over. It was a great night. We had a good time. But, you know, I was kind of putting it out there just to tell people, when you come to the meeting, what do you care how long it takes?
Right. What kind of hurry are you in?
Yeah, what are you in a hurry?
It's not like that much of a hurry to catch a bus, reevaluate things.
Yeah. So
it's like the guys that come in here when they're in a hurry. It's like, you're going fishing. Relax.
Yeah.
Step one of fishing is patience.
We had 50 people drop in on them all within a half an hour's time.
Yeah.
And plus everything else that's going on. So it all gets out there. Everything works good. But I'd rather have the food taste good than come quick.
Absolutely. Without a heartbeat.
I want it to taste good and not come quick. Or I'd like it both to happen, but you're never going to get both.
Pick one.
Pick one. So
I want a good cheap reel.
Yeah.
Pick one.
So anyway, but leaving the Port Charlotte area, now across from Port Charlotte Beach in that bay, there's been some redfish sneaking in over there.
Mm-hmm.
And it doesn't get talked about much, and I'm not really sure the name of that bay. I'm going to look it up and I'll get a name for that bay. But that bay has got some neat redfish right behind that first island. And back in that back corner, that two or three guys tell me it was rough and kind of breezy. They didn't want to make the ride across the harbor, a little too chilly. They snuck in there, and both of them had pretty good mornings catching redfish.
Yeah.
And middle of the day, the water's been a little low. You can't get back there during the middle of the day. But if you go early in the morning or later in the afternoon with the way the tides have been, and they were there just about daybreak both days, and really some nice redfish back through there. Not a lot of keepers, but all of them were close.
Right.
They did get a few keepers. They weren't getting dinner. They were just having fun. So, but swinging around there out onto the flat out from Port Charlotte Beach, heading west towards Mica Cutoff, there's a few cobia cruising that flat. You get a little bit of ladyfish. What's going on in the cutoff?
Right at the mouth of the cutoff, both just on the inside and on the outside, there's been some trout kind of stacking up a little bit. Nothing in really good quality size-wise, but at least some fish. Once you get up inside there's been a mixture of rat reds and some snook up in there. Finally starting to hear a couple more reports on those guys.
Well, the snook have been there. It's just they don't want to bite.
Now, yeah, but
we
it's
had the
weird
report from 41. The guy sat there all night the other night any place where there was lights, you could see all these fish. The snook were just hanging out there in the lights. They were right. all over the place. They didn't want to eat.
Right.
And I think that's what's been going on the cutoff, because those snook are there. They're big snook back in there. Some of the, I would say, Mica cutoffs holding potential world records, but getting them to bite, that's the problem.
I don't know
about
a potential world record anymore. That new world record's pretty tough.
Which one is it?
They just set a new world record for snook, 58 pounds, 4 ounces, Ooh. Or 58.8 ounces.
Well, let's say Florida record. But
yeah, Florida record should be no problem, but all tackle, that's going to be a tough nut to
crack. There's an all tackle record sitting on one of the reefs in the Gulf yeah. right now, I'll bet.
Yeah, yeah. It's a pretty impressive fish, though.
Mm-hmm.
They actually just set a new world record for hardhead catfish, too, 4.5 pounds.
Really?
Yeah. I got to tell Cale about that one, because yeah. he always swore up and down he was going to try to do that.
Yeah, I should have gone on a quest years ago to start breaking records.
It can still be done.
Yeah, I just, you know, back when I had the inclination and
the ambition
and all that other stuff, I could have done it easily. And, you know, I know I've caught several fish that would have broken a lot of records. I just, at that point, never really cared.
Right. Well, and the cool thing now, I mean, I know, like, everyone's so catch and release nowadays and politically correct and stuff. IGFA has finally jumped on board with that and does a catch and release records now. It's pretty cool. You can apply for it. They give you a tape measure, and it goes by inches on the fish. So all those fish that were previous world records now have their own category for catch and release. So you can start all over again with every species, like a snook that was yeah. unattainable world record. Now you could set potentially a world record
right.
catch and release in inches. So it's pretty
cool.
Now, I cool.
might be interested in doing that.
Yeah, I was looking at, I was reading up on it last night. I kind of think I want to play
and
with
I
it.
Get into, because you know the one thing mm-hmm. I love fishing more than anything is 2 pound test monofilament.
Right,
and that's to me that's one of my passions. So maybe you and I will do that. We'll go out and set some 2 pound records.
So some line class records on different fish.
Yeah,
that'd be a good time.
Yeah, because that's fun.
Yeah, to give that a try.
Anyway, swinging over into the Mayaca River, what do we got in the Mayaca?
Around Hog Island on the outside in that grass flats there, there's been some scattered pompano and scattered trout, a few incidental redfish. That's really about it out there. And then as you work your way up the Mayaca, heading up towards Eljo Bean's been pretty good, but it's still a little on the spotty side. Sheepshead were doing real good for a few days there this past weekend. There's also been some trout, there's a few snook at night, occasional black drum, occasional juvenile tarpon. There's been a few cobia cruising kind of out there in front on the Mayaca side around the bridge a little bit. Not any great numbers, but definitely worthwhile keeping your eye out for while they're out there cruising around. Starting to get a little bit better reports right down there by a cattle dock too. The redfish have started to move in there right there at the entrance by the lock.
Right.
And then the snook have started to pick up just a little bit more. And also the bass and tarpon and the snook up inside there in Gulf Cove have really started to pick up this past week, too.
Well, you know, it's been kind of amazing, all the different stuff coming around. So many wonderful people coming through the store. Just had a ball with people lately.
Oh, yeah.
But I want to remind me about that when we get around to Placida.
Okay.
Heading down the west side of the harbor, outside the bar, few pompano, not really fishable numbers, but you definitely could run into them.
Yeah, it's been bycatch.
Yeah, it's an accidental catch, but it's very worthwhile. Some trout laying right up on top of the bar, and actually quite a few redfish back by the trees.
Yeah.
But you've got early morning, late afternoon times, middle of the day, it's so hard to get back there. The water's so low, and we've had the winds coming out. And what's up with the cloudy weather? God, I almost feel like I'm in Ohio, you know?
Yeah.
Like Washington State. It's like being, I lived outside of Portland for a while, and I don't ever remember a winter like this.
No.
The first one I can remember.
Not this cloudy and overcast.
Usually we get a cloudy day, maybe a rain or something, and then sometime the sun comes out bright and it's shiny, but to have morning after morning overcast like this?
Right.
I don't know what's wrong, but...
And the weird part is it's been associated with fog, too.
Yeah.
I mean, we've had fog then overcast, so it's like it burns off, the fog burns off, but then you think it's high fog, then you realize, looking at the radar and everything else, it's all high clouds.
Yeah, it's like El Nino and the polar vortex and, you know, the sun irradiating isotopes are all conspiring against us at this point.
I think Kale called it the best yesterday, bipolar weather.
Yeah, this is absolutely bipolar weather.
it's all over the map.
Thank God we're not getting like they do up north.
No, no.
You know, once you get north of Tampa, the weather gets too screwy to, you know, it's sleet, it's rain, it's fog, it's snow.
Well, even out west, I mean, it's my mom's been freezing a lot out there. It's been a lot of cold weather out there. Today's actually pretty nice. Well, it's pretty chilly there right now. It's 45 degrees there now. But they've had a lot of, like, in the high 50s to mid-60s for days.
Yeah, Arizona is no treat this year. We're in one of the only good spots. Texas is a mess. All the states, it's just a mess.
And then my cousins in Indiana, they're just freezing. It's 3 degrees there right now. They can have it.
Yeah, so anyway, but, yeah, I don't know why this... Like I say, I have lived through a lot of winters in Florida, and I'm telling you, old man winter sitting in the chair here, and this is a weird year, but it's still better than anywhere else.
Absolutely.
Maybe Hawaii's got better than us. Maybe. I haven't heard anything about Hawaii, so
yeah,
I'm going to say a flip coin toss between us and Hawaii, but I can promise you it's way cheaper to drive to Florida.
Yes.
Yes. Driving to Hawaii is going to be expensive and pretty much a bugger. You know, it might cause a major retrofit on your car.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, anyway, yeah, the old Toyota is going to have a bit of a modification.
Yeah.
So, anyway, coming down on Cape Hayes. Cape Hayes is pretty good fishing right now. I got some nice snappers out towards the end of the bar. Haven't heard much for Spanish mackerel, one or two here and there, but
a few pompano, a lot of bonnet heads, some Atlantic sharpnose. The trout have been scattered all up and down the whole thing. Most of them are on the smaller side, but at least you're going to bend the rod. And then same thing with the cobia. They've been scattered all up and down all over the place. It's kind of a general thing right now with the cobia all over the entire harbor. Anywhere where you go, there's a possibility of one or a couple coming by you, so, you know, kind of keep an eye out for them.
Absolutely.
You know, and on your light tackle in that open water, they're perfectly fine to catch, you know, because most of them are like in that 25 to 33 inch range. Only a handful of them are actually legal size, but they're still a blast to catch.
Yeah, no, it's actually amazing out there now. Out in the Gulf, when we get out there, there's some spectacular fishing going on. As we get closer, it gets hard not to talk about it, but we'll get there in a minute. But out in front of Bull Bay and Turtle Bay, you got a little bit of snook, some odd assorted pompano, stuff like that. Out by the Cape Hayes Reef, what's going on out there?
Been a few more sheep's head out there, some nice mangrove snapper, the incidental bluefish. The bluefish haven't been real good numbers, but there's been some quality fish around. I've had some guys catching some 3 and 4 pounders, which for here
that's nice fish.
That's pretty darn good quality. You know, anywhere else that's bait for bigger bluefish, but
right.
You know, that's pretty good for here. There's also been some sheep's head hanging around that little or the big oyster bar right there at the entrance into Turtle Bay, and Gallagher's Cuts had some nice sheep's head around it.
Now if you go down to inside of Bull Bay and Turtle Bay, get some trout out on the flats, some mixed quality. I'm hearing kind of varied reports between quantity and quality.
Yeah, I think it depends on the guy, you know, as far as his luck goes, because, I mean, one guy's catching a ton of little ones, and the other guy's catching just a handful of nice legal-sized fish to even a few over the slot. Same way with the redfish up in there. It's been a mixed bag limit up inside there. One guy's doing good on bigger fish. You know, there's been a few actual oversized redfish cruising on the outside on those flats there throughout
right.
the center of Turtle Bay and also going into Bull Bay. But they're just by sheer luck coming across them and finding them. If you can find some of those schools of mullet, cast around them, because that seems to be where some of your bigger redfish have been hanging out. They have been getting beat up pretty bad by the netters out there, but they're finally starting to lay off just a little bit on them. So you are starting to see a few more incidental bigger redfish mixed in them.
Cool. So anyway, coming back around, Kaopalu over to maybe the Ice House, Kaopalu, Devilfish working north up towards Placida. What's going on in the flats out there?
up there around right around Placida, there's been, or from Placida basically over to Kapalau, redfish scattered all over on the flats. Most of them are on the smaller side with the incidental bigger ones. There has been a ton of trout throughout there. If you can find, there's that one oyster patch over there. What's that, just below Sandfly?
Something like that, yeah.
Somewhere around that area, there's that one oyster bar that's had a few bigger trout hanging around it and a lot of sheep's head of decent size. As you get closer to some of the bushes along the whole perimeter, not going up inside any of the creeks or anything, but there's been some decent sheep's head moving around those. A few redfish and a few snook. And then also scattered out there on those flats, there's been some...
For Vinny.
There's a... For out there along those flats, there's also been some bonnet heads and some Atlantic sharpnose. There's even been an incidental decent-sized bull in like that 4 to 5 foot range cruising around through there chasing some of the fish.
Well, that's pretty cool. I've been trying to catch up and see what's going on in the wide world of fishing out there. Placida, we had, you know, normally I know kind of what size tackle I want to sell somebody to give them the best of best fishing experience possible. But, you know, there's always that one, you know, he comes in, he wants this rod or reel that really, you know, is not going to, in your mind, is not going to be the best one for the job.
Right.
And you try and discuss it a little bit to figure out exactly what they're thinking when they make their tackle purchase. What do they want to get? What are they going to go for? How are they going to fish? And this couple came in. He wanted a much larger size reel and actually larger rod than I would have thought is good. Turns out he has a torn shoulder, and his shoulder's all messed up. So that oversized rod and reel, which is actually too big for the fish he was going for, actually worked out really good. I mean, we did some drop weight testing on him. Mm-hmm. Really nice couple from up north. They've been down just a little while. They're spending the winter down here. And he's done a lot of fishing, but he didn't think he'd be able to fish because of his arm is so tore up. And so what we did was I put some weights on there, and we figured it out, and we got him fishing. And I showed him the grouper technique where you cross-arm it, and under his bad shoulder, we put the butt of the rod up under his shoulder so he could grab it. His right shoulder's the one that's bad. And had him holding the rod with his left hand using the right armpit as the rod holder.
Right.
And he was able just to, you know, crank the rod and do that by going to a little oversized tackle, much heavier than it was reasonable for the fish. He's still going to get out there and still be able to catch fish. And
well, he's still going to be able to enjoy himself.
Yeah, he's still going to be able to catch fish and have a good time. And it's just
not always
goes
about fighting the fish. Sometimes it's about just being able to be out there and enjoy yourself for the mental therapy of it.
With everything that's wrong with his shoulder, even a small fish is going to be a battle for
right.
him. But he's still going to be able to enjoy it. And I guess the point was, every once in a while, I start thinking, yeah, I'm pretty good at my job. I know exactly what I should sell for this, that, and the next thing. And then somebody comes in and proves that I'm still an idiot, that I still need to learn a lot more stuff and pay more attention to what's going on. Because
I think that's the key right there, is just to pay a little bit more attention, you know, to the actual customer specific needs. Sometimes we get so focused on, doesn't matter what the needs are, because most of them are in good enough shape,
right?
But, and they've already got this preconceived notion that this is how it's supposed to be done.
But,
so,
you know, and
I'm guilty of that without a shadow of a doubt.
Yeah, well, we both are, and that was one of the reasons I was bringing it up, because he really taught me a valuable lesson yesterday. You know, re-taught me that you've got to spend a little more time with people and discuss what's going on physically with the person,
right,
to figure out if what they're doing is the right thing to do or not.
Because sometimes it's not as obvious as the walker or the cane that they come in with, or the limp or something like that.
He looked like he could whoop my butt. You know what I mean? He
right.
looked fine, and he was, you know, a little bit older, but I mean, in good shape. But there was no way to tell. He had this torn tendons and bad rotator cuff and all this other kind of stuff. And when we got playing around with the rods and my drop weights, putting the weights on the end of the rod and figuring it out to see what would work for him, we ended up a lot heavier on the tackle, but he's still going to be fishing. He's still going to have a good time. And, you know, I enjoyed relearning a very old lesson, and that's pay more attention, spend more time. You got to
ask a few specific questions.
And it's really hard with a lot of guys because guys don't want to tell you anything.
No, no.
A woman, you say, how you doing? Well, she'll tell you.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, she'll give you the whole thing about it, you know. And, you know, once they start talking, you know. Right. But with guys, it's really hard to pull that information out of them. And it took a little while to get to the bad shoulder. I was talking about, well, maybe we want to try this and this. And I was kind of showing him some stuff. He said, man, I can't my shoulder. And I went, okay. Now we're getting down to the specifics of this.
Right.
And once I knew I was dealing with a bad shoulder, then we were able to, I changed everything about what we were doing. We started looking at things in a different light. So anyway, thank you for the lesson. The couple was just wonderfully nice, and we spent probably about an hour together, you know, working out the rods and reels and everything. And it was really nice. It really taught me, you know, how much more I have to learn, how much more I need to pay attention. So anyway, going from Placida, you got some small sharks out there, and Robert's talked about sheephead and snapper. There's still some snook out there, very hard to get to bite. But as right. we head north up towards Lemon Bay, what's going on?
Getting a lot more reports on trout, still mostly on the small side, not getting a lot of big quality fish. But if you fish some of the deep sand holes and right out in front of all the docks up and down that whole intercoastal, that seems to be where you're getting the one or two bigger trout. And then underneath those docks, they've been getting some sheep's head and some incidental flounder, a few mangrove snapper. Even hear of an occasional gag grouper from underneath there. As you move up a little bit closer towards the, you know, stump pass, been a few more consistent, larger whiting. Sheep's head, obviously. Some pompano, flounder, kind of a mixed little bag moving in and out through there. Main thing is not to really anchor over there. Just start kind of drifting if you can. If you start whacking several fish, you can drop anchor, fish it for a little bit, but as soon as it starts to die off, drift out a little bit more and see what you can find. You know, and they've been on both sides of that pass there, you know, on both the south and the north end of it. And then even up there in Ski Alley, fishing all those mangroves, as much boat traffic goes through there, the fishing's still been pretty decent right through there.
Yeah. I'm sorry, I was
okay.
Kind of checking on something I'd wrote, and I was just like, boy, you know, that's... I didn't realize when I wrote a fishing update and how much detail I went into it. And people were answering me going, that's way too much work. There's no way I'm doing that. You know? I'm going to go somewhere else to do something. I just realized that, you know, I probably talked them out of going there and fishing.
Right.
I don't usually do that. But, you know, I guess in this case, it's true. Because, I mean, I told them, you know, when they're looking for a certain fish, what they had to do to, you know, actually find the fish.
Yeah, and, but, I mean, the main thing is, I mean, I would rather be honest to them and have them be frustrated with that than lie to them and then have them totally be aggravated and frustrated and not even want to trust anything we say again to them.
No, no, and you never lie to people.
No.
Ever.
No, I mean, I would rather have them be upset because I told them the truth about how either terrible the fishing is or how difficult it's going to be or the amount of money they're going to have to put into a product to actually accomplish what that specific species is that they want to do it properly. I would rather do that than risk them being upset with me because I totally misguided them.
Right.
You know, I never want to intentionally misguide somebody, you know. I mean, of course, there's times where you aren't accurate, you know, but it's not
an
intentional thing. And I would much, much rather go out.
Well, I always, you know, look at it this way. It's not supreme deity, Frank. It's just fishing, Frank.
Right, exactly. My crystal ball has an 8-ball on it that you flip over that has 28 different answers on it, and that's pretty much about what I got.
So, anyway, we're going to take a walk down the beaches now. If you're going to walk along the beaches, and I think because of the water temperature and the weather is kind of consistent all the way pretty much from Venice all the way down towards Sanibel. I mean, there's, yeah. It's pretty much going to be the same type of fish, the
Absolutely.
Same scenarios. What would, if you're just going to walk along and say cast in a jig or a spoon or something, what would you expect to catch?
The flounder, some whiting, some sheep's head, pompano especially. There's also been a lot of juvenile permit mixed in with those pompano. There's been an oddball incidental snook. There's been some jacks out there. But it seems there's certain areas up and down the beaches, like Manasota Beach last week was doing pretty good, but then it died down. Then I heard that the north end of Stump Pass Beach right there by the parking lot was actually doing fairly well. The fish are moving around still quite a bit. You're going to catch a few here and there as you work the whole shoreline, but you'll find there's isolated pockets that are doing better. But the closer you get to the passes, the better it seems to get, you know. And I think it's just all about the water movement and all the different varieties of food that are flushing in and out of there that are making it kind of fun. Some of the guys that are shark fishing from the beaches at night up there at Caspersons and Boca and all that stuff, they're catching a few. It's not gangbusters by any stretch, but they are getting a few sharks. During the daytime, they have been getting some bonnetheads fairly regularly. Oddball Atlantic sharp nose or black nose shark, but most of them are on the, you know, most of them are the bonnet heads.
Yeah, mostly smaller sharks. A lot of fun on light tackle.
Absolutely.
And now going out in the Gulf, and I think what's brought on this phenomenal fishing in the Gulf is when we get these drastic changes in air pressure, it changes the water pressure and really messes up the fish. They have a hard time maneuvering, feeding, anything. And the deeper the water is, the less the effects have on air pressure has on the fish, because air pressure in shallow water is a drastic change on water pressure, but air pressure on deep water doesn't really get that much changes because you're going down several atmospheres and all this other kind of stuff, as we've talked about before. But it's brought some phenomenal fishing into the Gulf. The red grouper is just unbelievable right now.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, that 68 to 80 feet of water range has been kind of the magic number for the red grouper for consistent numbers. A handful of guys are getting them in closer, but those guys have got good little, you know, their own little tiny exposed rock pile somewhere. But in a lot closer, well, let's stay out there for a minute. Out there in those same areas where you're getting the red grouper, the AJs have been doing fairly well on a lot of those reefs. The bad news about AJs is they do move a lot, so you might knock the living snot out of them today on the Palm Island Ferry, and then tomorrow they're up at the M16 up there off of Venice, and then the next day they're all the way down to the Barranco. You know, you never know where they're going to be, so just be prepared for them. Also out there on those same wrecks, they've been doing pretty good on the triggerfish, and then the general consensus across the board from out there at that 30-mile mark all the way to inside within 3 miles, grunts, lane snapper, mangrove snapper, some scattered sheep's head, occasional flounder, those have been doing really, really good. So a lot of your smaller reef fish have been incredible from like 3 to 15 miles. You don't have to really go out any farther than that if you don't want to.
Well, and that's the cool thing about the Gulf right now. You don't have to make the big runs. The farther you go, more likely the bigger fish you're going to catch at this point, because there's a lot less fishing pressure and just more fish out there. But as you get in close, there's so many fish to catch, you're going to have a great day.
Right.
You're really going to enjoy this Gulf thing right now.
The other thing is all the cobia that are all over the place out there. I mean, there's scattered cobia, a little better numbers out there, honestly, better than there has been in the harbor. Most of them are still that same barely legal size, but a fair consistent amount of them. Even some of the guys that are kind of trolling around trying to find the incidental lost king mackerel and stuff, especially if you're trolling along the trap lines out there, that's where they're picking up some of the bigger legal cobia while they're trying to troll for the kings.
Have we heard anything about stone crab?
One of the slower years they've had. I think this is like their third slowest year in a row.
Yeah, I don't know what it is about that, but I've had several people talking to me about, you know, they've been trying to find stone crab claws and, you know, all that. And
they're really available, but they're spendy.
Yeah, it's a little pricey. It's a very slow year, and, you know, there's a lot of...
Even where the Everglades, you know, where those guys are notorious for being some of the cheapest around, the handful of customers that have driven down there said, it was just as cheap to stay up here minus the drive.
Right. You know? Yeah, you know. I don't find... It reminds me when I was trying to find furniture for the house after we moved in.
Oh, jeez.
Because, you know, I drove all the way basically from Bradenton all the way to Naples looking for stuff and bought my furniture across the street.
Right.
Right across from the bait shop. 100, yeah. You know, 150 yards from here. That's
where maybe 75 yards, really.
Yeah. I mean, it was just absolutely amazing. You know, it's kind of weird how all that works.
Well, it's the same way with us. I mean, her and I have been looking for a couch for 3 years now, and we've been everywhere, not quite all the way up to Bradenton, but from Sarasota to Fort Myers, and she happened to stumble one on just for dumb luck just a few months ago. But 3 years looking for a couch.
Right. Did you find it across the street?
We actually found it up there by Lowe's at Haverty's.
Oh, okay. Yeah, it's just amazing, you know, that I'm learning more and more all the time. You know,
it's easier to walk across the street. And
yeah, driving around and running all over the country only gets you so far.
Yeah.
So, anyway, down by...
Wait a minute. Sorry, because we did kind of get sidetracked out there in the Gulf, too. There's been the big black tips are still pretty good out there, the big sandbar sharks. They're scattered all over the place out there, so while you're anchored up on the reefs, don't be surprised if you get...
Well, we got that 7-degree water temperature.
Mm-hmm. Well, the sandbars are always out there this time of year because they actually follow in those mullet that run offshore for the spawn.
Right.
They follow them right back in. The big black tips just naturally start to move in this time of year, but they're scattered. But if you can come across them, those black tips, you know, we're so used to in the harbor catching black tips in that 2 to 3.5, sometimes 4 foot range.
Right.
These are true legitimate 6 footers. They're 90 to 100 pounders. I mean, they're very, very good size black tips.
And an amazing fight.
Yeah, wow. I mean, they're speed demons. I mean, they will tug and make some serious long, hard runs. I mean, sharks, sandbar sharks, they're just a tank.
Yeah, they're but just these things powerful.
These things will burn off 100 yards and then launch 6 to 10 feet in the air while doing it all at the same time. It's cool.
Yeah, what I've actually... Black tips, the only way I can tell, when I get a sharp nose on the rod, he's a good fight, and he's a little more acrobatic. But... when you get a black black tip on a true black tip, that thing just, I mean, amazingly quick. Yeah. I mean, just faster than anything I've ever seen.
Absolutely.
Everything you always dreamed of a bonefish is actually a black tip shark.
Yeah.
Because I've caught 30-inch bonefish, and a 30-inch black tip shark will just wreck it.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, a true black tip.
Yeah.
So... anyway, but down by Sanibel, Punarasa, all down there, what are we looking at around the bridges and the flats inside there?
The bridges, I haven't had a whole lot of reports right around the immediate bridges. I'm sure that the sheep's head are doing good because they kind of seem to be ghosts all over the place. But right. On the flats down there and in a lot of those deeper sand holes, they've been getting some better sheep's head, a much bigger trout down there, bonnet heads, occasional bluefish, occasional very lost Spanish mackerel. A few oversized redfish underneath all the docks over there. The docks over by Punarasa.
Right.
Those have kind of gotten flooded out with the sheep's head, some flounder, some mangrove snapper. Not so much with the snook anymore. They've kind of boogied out. So it's a good mixture of smaller reef fish.
You know, another humbling experience.
What's that?
Everything I predicted for sheep head this year.
Totally wrong.
Completely wrong. Very humbling. The whole supreme deity, Frank, you know, god of the fishing, couldn't be farther from the truth. I mean, I was dead wrong about the whole sheep head thing.
Yeah, but I thought the same. I was with you, not with the sheep's head, but with the trout.
Right.
You know, I thought the trout fishing was going to be superb just because it started off pretty strong in September, and usually September's like... people ask you where the trout are at, and you're like, you'll catch one here, you'll catch one there. And people were catching handfuls on the beaches, inside, and just a various
size.
Same
with the sheephead. We saw all these schools of sheephead moving around, all these fish together, big bunches of fish, nice-sized fish. Everything was set up for a perfect sheephead season, and it never really materialized. It's it's a good season. People are catching some nice sheephead, but it's about a third of what I thought it would be.
Oh, yeah.
And same Absolutely. Thing with the trout. It's just, I don't know what's going on, but man, both you and I really wrong this year.
Yeah.
So don't believe a single word we said, folks. You know, nothing we say is right. So, you're listening to two goofballs who ain't got it together. I don't know. I just had to bring that up because the more I've been sitting here in quiet frustration going, you know, I don't get it. Every single sign, you know, prediction point was there. I should have just walked up to the counter, grabbed the magic eight ball, whirled it over, and said, is it going to be a good sheephead season?
Right.
I think I would have been better off. Yeah. So,
I agree with that.
But anyway, coming around St. James City, Matt Lachey, what are we looking at?
Sheaves had moved in a little bit better there. Still not phenomenal, but there is some better fish there. The trout have been sporadic and good. The redfish have been scattered around there. There has been a few oddball croaker that I heard about this past week down there.
Well, that's good. I always like hearing about those because we spent so many years without them, and now right. that they're making a comeback, it's really cool.
And that's another thing, too, that I forgot about. Like, up and down that whole intercoastal, Placida, out along the beaches on some of those reefs, and down there in Mount Lachey, black sea bass still. I'm still getting at least 3 or 4 different reports a week of black sea bass. And two, like, not just one here. These guys are, one guy, a lady was in here the other day, yesterday morning.
Yeah.
And she said a guy caught 3 of them, another guy caught 3 or 4 of them out there off of Placida. And then I had another gentleman in, I think it was Friday, that got them down there, drifting down there by Mount Lachey.
You know, I know what happened to the flounder. I know why the sawfish, the flounder and the sawfish, I know why they left. That was easy. Flood, 1995, June.
Right.
I mean, 18 inches of rain, 2 hours, destroyed the habitat, never really did stop raining, all the seagrass died, everything was a mess, and they came back right on schedule. We had a 2-year drought, and the drought allowed the water to clean up enough where we had a lot of seagrasses coming back. Everything was working out good. I know why we got the flounder back. I know why we have the sawfish back. It was a very simple matter of habitat lost and then regained.
Right.
But the sea bass, I don't get it because they're not, they don't go for those habitats. They're you know, more like a reef fish. They're inshore reef fish, so to speak.
Mm-hmm.
And they all of a sudden, they go from nothing to, wow, they're catching them.
Right.
Once again, I don't know why you listen to this show. I don't have any idea why you're paying any attention to anything I say.
Every year, you have somebody that catches one that brings you a photograph of one and goes, I think this is a black sea bass, but can you tell me for sure? Or right. they're like, I caught this weird fish. It kind of looked like a snapper, but I don't know. You know, they bring in a picture of one, but it's usually one, maybe two every winter. That's it.
I think what we got to do is really go back and look at some of the weather from, because if they're about that size now, that's a 2-year-old fish, possibly 3.
Mm-hmm.
So we got to figure out what was going on 2 to 3 years ago to figure out why we have them now.
Well, you know, the interesting part that you say that is a customer brought it up to me last night and said something about, you know, because how crappy the trout fishing is
right.
and the sheep's head and all these other fish have been so weird this year and last year, really, except for the sheep's head. The trout were
right.
funkier last year, too. And I know everything goes in cycles, and that's what I explained
to
him.
Yeah, the 3-year cycles.
3 to 7-year cycles, yeah. depending on the species. But he said he mentioned something about how did the oil spill affect our area. And directly, it never really fazed us other than the propaganda of the news.
Right.
But who's to say that indirectly, long-term effect, this might be some of the trickle effect happening coming down?
Oh, yeah.
Because you dealt with all that spray crap that sank everything, and it just wrecked you.
Yeah, I've been sick since 2010.
So who's to say that, because we're downhill, you know, sewage flows downhill.
Well, the Gulf Current goes from there and does come past us.
Right.
The Gulf Current, it swirls around, and the water in Louisiana and Alabama does come around the coast, and it does come right down the coast of Florida. That's fact.
Yeah.
Our water flows north to south here.
So who's to say that even if it's not directly on top of us or polluting our water directly,
and
that 10, 30, 50 miles out is enough to, it's kind of like a shark being able to pick up a drop of blood in 10,000 gallons of water.
Right.
What's to say that these fish aren't able to pick up these different chemicals and death or whatever and running from it because...
Well, I can tell you, being at the oil spill, watching what happened up there during it, there was almost no dead fish before the government sprayed that, what they called disbursement, which was actually a sinking agent. Mm-hmm. All they wanted to do was get it out of sight and get rid of this chemical. And
you can't see it. It doesn't exist.
Yeah. As long as the oil is under the water, no one can see it, so it doesn't exist anymore. Problem solved. I don't know, you know, who got paid for what, but that was a horrible thing. And that's what I think my problem was, is getting sprayed with that stuff. We were told to be off the water on Saturday, couldn't go out on the water. Everybody had to be off the water Friday, and no one was allowed out Saturday, but I was on special ops, so I ended up having to go on the water Saturday. Saturday night is when I started getting sick, and I've been sick for, what, you know, a long time now.
Yeah.
So, anyway.
Who's to say that, you know... It
could be doing the fish the same way.
Yeah, it could be affecting them in some manner that's getting them to move down this way or getting to move out of this area, you know, like the trout, maybe the trout and the sheep.
But it's just like with me. There's no way to prove that's what happened.
Right, exactly. So, it's all hypothetical.
And it's no way to prove that's what's happening to the fish. I wish we could because, you know, I wouldn't mind if BP gave me some money for being sick ever since that Saturday.
But they'll just raise their gas prices again to make up for their loss.
And it would be nice to prove that they're messing up our fishing, but there's no way to ever prove this.
Right.
And besides, the key element in is the government mandated they spray that. And once the federal government mandates they spray it, there's nothing you can do about it. It's like Agent Orange.
Right.
20 or 30 years, probably by the time I'm ready to die or already dead, they will come out with a whole thing and give my ancestors, you know, class action money because of what was done that day.
Right.
Or that weekend. But anyway, back on into the harbor, up the east side. What's going on the east side?
We missed over by Jug Creek and Pine Island.
Let's do Jug Creek.
All around Boquilla, around those sandbars and that entire flat around the north end of Boquilla, a lot of trout. Quite a few pompano, sharks of miscellaneous sizes and species. Pufferfish galore.
I love puffers.
I mean, they're awesome.
You know, they're going to ruin every... If you have a soft plastic lure over there, make sure it's consistent color from the beginning to the back. Because anything with a bright tail on it, you're going to see little nips and chunks and things taken out. They got a beak like a parrot.
Yeah.
And it's really fun because if you have something small and, you know, not too, you don't want to hurt the fish, but if you got something you put in their mouth, watch, they'll just take a nice notch right out of it.
Yeah,
absolutely incredible power. And what's weird is we handle them all the time.
Yeah.
And I don't know of a time when I've heard of anybody getting a chunk of finger missing. But if you put your finger in the mouth of a puffer, you will come back minus part of that finger. They won't take the finger, but they're going to take a good, healthy chunk of it.
I guess I've always been smart enough to not try to stick my finger because I get bit by a lot of stupid stuff.
Yeah, you do.
And
You like doing a lot of stupid stuff. You chase poisonous reptiles through the rainforest. You go to try and play with the world's most deadliest snakes. I mean, that's just quintessential Robert.
Right, but for some reason...
And I hate to say this, but all the while being blind, so you can't really see where are the dinging animals and the snakes and all this. You got to get so close to see them. You know. I know you don't like talking about that, but I mean, seriously, Robert, that's nuts.
Yeah,
so
a little bit.
Yeah.
But I think it's just kind of funny because I've never been bit by a pufferfish. And, you know, I mean, I've gotten the hooks out with my fingers and pliers and everything else.
And I always treat them so gentle because they're just...
They're cool.
I hate to say this not sound, you know, manly about it, but they're just adorable.
Yeah.
I mean, they blow up in this big balloon and then they down, tap them a little bit, they blow back up, you know?
Yeah.
It's just absolutely, you know, it's...
And if you look at the spiny puffers, the colors on them are just amazing.
Oh, yeah, spiny boxfish puffer ones? Oh, my God.
Well, just the spiny puffer.
The spiny puffer, yeah.
Not the boxfish. The spiny boxfish is different, but the because both of them are spectacular looking. But it's amazing. I mean, they got green eyes. They got green and blue spots on them. I mean, just...
They're cool.
They're cool. They're really, really neat. Annoying if you're a fisherman.
And alien looking.
Cool.
I mean, it's hard to believe they're from this planet.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, they just don't... What kind of a... How did they ever evolve that way? It's like, are you kidding me? So anyway...
And the different species of them, too, is cool.
Yeah, there is an amazing amount of fish down there in Jug Creek, Boquilla. You do have some white bait down there. There's also some white bait over by Devilfish, Sandfly, a little bit by Placida. We've heard scattered reports of white bait over by Pirate Harbor. And but it's all scattered, and Jug Creek seems to be the most consistent. But, you know, then again, it depends on how many people are there at the time.
So, yeah. And the other thing is, it's been so wishy-washy whether it works or not. I mean, the snook are eating it, But snook season's closed, so why should you be out there taking the white bait for future stuff to go out and target an animal that you can't even keep right now?
Yeah,
you know, it's for me personally. I mean, that's jumping on a soapbox for a minute, but
yeah, I'm not really on that soapbox. I'm not for or against that. I'm hoping the one scientist, when we were talking about no white bait and the problems we're having with over capture of bait, the one guy said that in South America there's a small fish that they just take huge amounts of that used to only spawn once a year. They're spawning three times a year now to try and keep their numbers up so they don't go extinct. And it's amazing how nature will adapt itself to human stupidity.
Yeah.
You know, or greed, or whatever it is. Yeah. So, anyway, but let's just say if you want to go fishing, take some kids, you'll have an amazing time, educational time. Just make sure you don't put your fingers in anything you shouldn't.
Right.
But down there in Jug Creek, just drifting that flat, and
it's pretty amazing fishing down there for a variety of stuff. And there's also been some big ladyfish and bluefish mixed in.
And have you got some guests from up north? I mean, to put a puffer in their hand and watch it blow up like a balloon, I mean, they're just going to freak.
Absolutely.
I know I did the very first time. So,
I still get excited about them.
Yeah, it's still fun to play
like
with.
Like a little kid sometimes. Oh, look. Ding, ding, ding.
It's cool.
Watch them float away like a balloon on the water.
So,
anyway. Oh, there goes a deflated. He swam away. Good.
Yeah, it's just weird. Evolution or supreme deity, whichever one you're going to look at, that just does some amazing stuff.
Absolutely.
So, going over to the east side of the harbor.
Going up the east side from basically Two Pines up to Burnt Store. There's been some pompano scattered on the outside of the bar. 3 feet of water is that magic number over there. If you're in that 3 feet of water, there's the pompano, there's trout, there is a pile of Atlantic sharpnose and blacknose sharks over there right now.
That's what I've heard.
A lot. I mean, guys have been seeing them scattered all over the place down there, literally from Burnt Store heading south down there. And then up there on the flats itself, there's been some scattered redfish, some scattered trout, a few incidental cobia, oddball snook or two, especially for those guys that are wading, you know, cutting through the Burnt Store, south of Burnt Store Marina there and walking out to wade out there.
Kind now, of a mixed we variety. Are adding a new section to fishandfranks.com, and we have the shore section with all the boat ramps. We have the pier section, piers on it, and we've got boat-only spots, shallow water spots, freshwater spots, kayak spots. We're adding wading spots, places to go wading. And I've got one of the things marked off on how to get from land out to the east side wading on the Fish and Franks maps.
Down there below Burnt Store there?
Yeah, down below Burnt Store. I've got one of them. I'm going to mark the other one on there. I'll get to that in the next day or so. But we're actually adding a new section of spots called wading spots. So if you want to go wading and you want to do something, go to the maps of where to go fishing. And I've got a big map up there, and I learned how to put the names on the map and link those to pages that I create about that spot. So it's not real, real high tech. It's just a lot of pictures of me with circles, drawings, and pictures and arrows on the back of each one to be used as evidence against us. But, you know, I cannot tell a lie, officer. I put that envelope at the bottom of that half ton of garbage. So, but on the east side, great shark fishing. Some redfish back up right inside the bar. And then you kind of got to go all the way up to the mangroves again.
Right.
And if you get back to the back of the mangroves and you're willing to, you got to go slow. It's so shallow. Running back there, there might not be enough water to set down. When you stop the boat, you might be high and dry. Because most boats will, if it's any type of V on the bottom of the boat, it will run shallower than it will sit.
Right.
A flat bottom boat actually takes more water to run than it does to set down. So if you're in something like a big Carolina skiff with a very flat bottom on it, not a modern Carolina skiff with a V hull, like an old DLX, you can actually run back there. And when you set down, you should be okay. But if you've got any type of V-hull boat, don't drive back there, idle back there.
Right.
Because you might not get out. And no. It could be many, many hours before the tide comes up to get you back out of there. So
or have sea tow.
Yeah, I don't even know if sea tow can reach you back there.
They may not reach you back there. Yeah. They may just wave to you and say, thanks for playing.
Yeah, thanks for playing. We'll see you on the next round of...
Exactly.
And that's definitely... you're not going to die, but spending the night out there on these nights where the temperature's in the 60s, the no-see-ums, oh my goodness,
yeah.
You're going to walk home.
Yeah,
you will even walk.
It's not cold enough to keep the mosquitoes and no-see-ems down.
So, anyway, coming back up, that brings us around to PGI and the PGI canals.
Well, we got Pirate Harbor first.
Oh, we got Pirate Harbor.
Skip that. Pirate Harbor, the trout have been moving in and out of there pretty consistently. Variety of sizes. Some decent-sized trout in there. Some pompano and juvenile permit cruising along the oyster bars there. Mangrove snapper. As you get further up into Pirate Harbor, there's been some nice mangrove snapper underneath some of those docks in there, and the juvenile tarpon have kind of gotten a little active in the past few days over there. I like it.
No, there he goes. There he goes. Hang on. He's running. He's going to come up. He's going to come up. There he...
Oh, he took you under the dock off. And broke you.
Yeah, you know, I got to learn to control that rod better. Okay. Anyway.
As you move out there onto the flats there, just north of Pirate Harbor, there's trout scattered all over the place. Bonnet heads are really, really good. And then there's been some scattered cobia mixed around there throughout the whole thing. Look for stingrays. Look for manatees. That is another thing, too, that's going on out there that people need to really be aware of, both the east wall and the west wall. This is the time of year the manatees move up into the flats. They are so cool to watch. I don't care what anybody says about them. They are just fascinating to watch, but just kind of be aware that they are a little bit more abundant, I guess, in these shallow waters this time of year.
Oh, a lot of manatees, and having collisions with manatees is not fun. No. The problem with manatees are you'll see them in one spot, but you're going to have to slow down and veer as far away from them as possible, because manatees, they prescribe to a ancient Korean religion where walking in front of a moving vehicle like a horse and carriage or a car will cut the evil spirits off from behind them. And I know this to be true because I've watched them do it. They'll be 50 feet outside towards the sandbar, and I'm running very close to shore and see them over there and go, okay, I'm, you know, 30, 50 feet away. There's no manatees around me. And come around there and have them run in front of the boat.
Right.
So there's no safe way to go by them. All you can do is just kind of slow down and enjoy the show. I mean, they're really cruel, you know, kind of twisted freaks in nature. I mean, they're just this big old cross between a seal, a dairy cow, hippopotamus, and whatever. I mean, they're just weird and extremely, extremely neat. And you'll be fishing and they'll come up and just set their head on the boat and scare the living daylights out of you when you're not used to it.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, if you're sitting there drifting over those flats, you know, a lot of times they're going to come up out of nowhere. They can be pretty stealthy for as large as they are. And all of a sudden you'll feel the boat kind of move and you're like, what the heck was that? Look down and there's a manatee underneath there scratching his back on his skag or underneath the bottom of the boat.
Oh, yeah.
You know, and they'll hang out for quite a while sometimes.
Standing on the back of the flats boat and fishing right up by 75 and barefoot, shorts, you know, and just casting and catching a few trout and stuff like that, having a good time, not really paying attention to much. And all of a sudden, I about jumped out of the boat. A manatee came up and put its face on my foot.
Oh, Jesus. And I mean, yeah, I would have bugged out.
This is a 400-pound creature, you know, huge. And all of a sudden, just comes up, lays its head there. And it was just putting its head on the boat to say, hey, you got any lettuce or, you know, water? What do you got for me, you know? And it just happened to land on my foot.
Oh, I would have freaked out big time.
Oh, yeah.
I would have bugged out big time. I mean, I jumped one time down there fishing by Jug Creek.
Yeah.
We were shark fishing down there. I'm in my own little world watching, you know, we had a couple of like 5-foot bull sharks kind of swimming out just where you could just barely see them. And I'm just do-do-do-do-do, and all of a sudden I just catch a glimpse of something real quick out of the corner of my eye right below me. And look down, and it's a manatee sitting right there, resting on the...
gunwale.
No, not on the gunwale, the trim tabs.
Oh.
But, his whole body is sitting... You know, with the current, with his head resting
on the trim tab.
Right on the trim tab, looking at me, and I'm just thinking, holy mackerel, how long has he been there? You know, just, it startled me. Yeah. You know.
Imagine when it comes up, puts his head on your foot. Yeah,
you know?
No. Yeah.
You know, I'm visualizing sharks and everything else, and something, shark is the first thing I'm talking about. Oh, Where'd you come from?
A couple of
I just got eight.
Yeah. It's I'm like dead. The farthest I've ever fallen was when, doing iron work, and I walking across the scaffolding, and you're walking across, and then your foot, they've two 2x10s laid on top of each other, and that inch and a half, that's a 50-foot fall.
Oh, absolutely.
When you go down that first inch before you hit that last, till you touch the next board, that's a 50-foot drop right there.
Yeah.
So, yeah. So, anyway, that brings us up to PGI.
PGI, going into Alligator Creek, into Burnt Store Isles, and into the Poacher's Cut area. Been a lot of jacks. Jacks have kind of been really abundant lately. 3 to 5 pounders, occasional 10 pounder, but it's kind of nice to see them finally coming back since the freeze. Every year it's gotten a little better since the freeze. As long as the netters will leave them alone. Trout have been in and out of Alligator Creek, but not super consistent numbers, more closer towards the mouth. Few oddball pompano.
When they straighten the channel out, the channel used to have a dog leg in it going into Alligator Creek, and it was never good on really holding a lot of fish. Since they've straightened that channel out and they cut it straight out and it no longer makes the, S turn and dog leg, it seems to hold a lot more pompano.
Mm-hmm.
It's weird because it's basically the same depth, basically the same width.
Yeah, they really didn't change it. I mean, just straight to...
But instead of having the two curves in it, it now going straight out, it's weird. It proves how the water current, the flow, and all that affects where the fish will hang out.
Absolutely.
Because I don't care... That channel's been there for decades, and then all of a sudden they straighten it, and now the pompano go in it.
Yeah.
I mean, it's weird because for as long as that thing was dog-legged, I never heard of a pompano there. Since they've straightened it out, every year the pompano will go there.
Yep. It's strange.
Yeah. Oh, boy, there's so much to learn.
Just when you think you have it figured out, here's okay. A monkey wrench.
All right, what else do we have to talk about today?
Going into PGI, the baby tarpon are everywhere, especially on a lot of the lights at night. Some of the guys are in there having a really good time, especially if you want to throw a fly at night.
Now, one of the things you can do is one of the best flies in existence for that cost $1. Actually, they come in a pack of two, so it's $2. And it's a teaser we use for the pompano.
Yeah.
And they work great on those tarpon. And if you want to play with a fly rod or even, just take your spinning rod and... put a bunch of 15-pound test fluorocarbon out the end of it, like 15, 20 feet of it, and just use that kind of as a fly rod just to kind of whip that little teaser out there. And it's amazingly effective.
Absolutely.
And I'm still going to call during the day right now, black chartreuse rattle trap, 1/4 ounce for the tarpon, and the little fishy jig.
Mm-hmm.
Those would be the two... best.
The Tiny Terrorize has been working pretty good too.
Yeah, I gotta give the Tiny Terrorize. I keep forgetting about them. The Tiny Terrorize, the Little Fishy, and the 1/4 ounce black and chartreuse rattle trap. Those have got to be your three best picks for if you want to get one of those canals, tarpon out of the canals.
Absolutely. The other thing that's been really pretty good in there, especially along the rim canal, fishing all the docks. And working it real, real slow, but keeping it right on the bottom, either with the Rockport Rattler or any kind of jig head. A lot of your small 3-inch paddle tails, especially the darker colors, just kind of almost vertical jigging them right now. It's been
really?
picking up some redfish and some snook and some mangrove snapper. And then along the bushes, kind of the same scenario going on, but you got to work it real, real slow.
Now, if you're going to do that, like back in PGI and casting the docks and stuff, watch out for very expensive boats. You don't want somebody throwing rocks at yours. Don't throw jigs at theirs.
Right.
But one of the cool things to do, take an old rod, 7-foot rod, that you're not really that happy with, and cut about 12, 14 inches off the end of the rod and just put a tip on it. And now what you're going to end up with is about a 5.5-foot, very heavy action, great rod for fishing the docks because you need short and powerful.
Mm-hmm.
And so if you have a 7-foot rod you don't really use anymore, it's just kind of sitting there in the, and I'm talking about an 8 to 17, 8 to 15 pound class, even a 6 to 12, that 7 foot rod, when you take that end of it off, you eliminate all the whip of it, and it becomes a great rod for using under the docks.
Absolutely.
And we used to do that all the time to get these fish out of the docks, because getting under the dock, the shorter rod allows you a lot better pitching, a lot better skipping accuracy, because you're not dealing with that 7 foot, 7.5 is just almost impossible to do it with, but it allows you a lot more movement. You can flip it upside down and turn it like that little Fish and Frank's rod we have, the Early Angler kid series.
That's an awesome rod.
You can take that, turn it right upside down while standing on the boat, and whip that bait underneath there with an underhand motion, and it really makes a big difference positioning where you want to toss the bait. Rather than trying to do that big sidearm sweep, you can literally just chuck it in there. But when you get the fish on, it gives you so much more control.
Absolutely.
You know, and these big fish under the docks, that's really, I hate to say, cut up your tackle, and don't do it to a rod you like.
Right,
but
obviously.
If you've got a rod you're not that interested in anymore and you never use it, but you want to try this under the dock fishing, try that. Just cut a foot of it off, maybe. Maybe we'll take a foot and a half of it off. And it, you got to leave enough guides on there. You want to leave, you know, 3 or 4 guides on it. But really makes a great rod for that heavy cover, short distance casting.
Yeah.
So I think on that note, we've just told you to destroy your tackle. And
how not to find fish.
How not to find fish, and that we don't know why the fish are here, why they're not. On all these little tiny bits of information, anything else we need to go over today?
Alligator Creek Reef is about pretty much it. The 20-foot holes have been pretty quiet. A few trout in them, silver trout, a few small sharks, but mainly around the reef itself. Sheep's head have moved in there a little bit more. Mangrove snapper have been doing real good. Quite a few small cobia and bonnethead sharks all over it. So, you know, you're going to at least bend a rod. It's not all quality fish, but it's definitely fish, you know, pretty fishy.
Okay. So, when we wrap up the show, we're getting ready to head to the Charlotte County Boat Show.
Get ready to set up for that.
Yeah, Charlotte County Boat Show is going to be Thursday, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. We will be giving talks 10:30, 11:30, 12:30, 1:30, and 2:30 every day down there at the Charlotte County Boat Show. A lot of different topics, a lot of different captains. We have our tent sale event, which is coming up. It's the only one in the United States. You can come and meet the people from the factory. All factory people in the booths, and it's a very cool day. Happens one day and one day only at right here at Fish and Frank's, Saturday, March 14th. But if you're sitting around this weekend, you don't know what to do, and you can't get out on the water for whatever reason, come down to the Charlotte County Boat Show. We'll be giving fishing seminars, talking about all different kinds of stuff. We're going to have a couple of specials down there on some different gear. Not a lot. There's not going to be any great deals, but we'll have a few pretty good deals. And always some cool boats to look at, neat stuff to see down there at Charlotte County Boat Show. Come down and see us there. And I guess that's about it until we get back on again. Anything else?
That's about it. I think we covered it pretty well.
Folks won't find us now because Mr. Satch and Mr. Cross, we gone fishing.
Actually, that was Mr. Frank and Mr. Ron.
Instead
nice.
Of just the wishing. Oh, yeah.
Goodbye, boys and girls. Goodbye. Goodbye. Okay. See you on the next Radio Fishing. Bye, y'all.